tonight's show is kind of special for me because it reminds me of the worst gig that I ever had. Here's what happened. I've been doing comedy for, in 2 weeks, it'll be 16 years since the first time I ever went on stage.
So your comedy can drive.
That's right. It can drive. And 6 months into doing stand-up, I didn't know that there's jobs that you're not supposed to take. So when the woman from the Dayton Dragons baseball team came up to me after a show and said, how would you like to play in front of a sold-out stadium while doing stand-up dressed like an umpire? I said, lady, I've been doing this half a year. I'm more than ready for it. And that was the worst thing that I've ever said in my life. I drove up to Dayton. They gave me my umpire uniform, which is two sizes too small. Not a good look on me. And I realized that when this guy was like, I think your chest protector's on funny. And I was like, I'm not wearing a chest protector. You gave me a medium. And I immediately regretted agreeing to do the gig. And I said to this guy, I said, what happens when this goes as bad as I think it's going to? And I'll never forget this guy. He was like the biggest man I've ever met in my life. He was 6'7", 280. He said, I played linebacker for the New York Jets in the National Football League for 7 years. I know what fear is. This is nothing. You're going to go out there. You're going to have a good time. And if anything goes wrong, I'll save you. And I was like, all right, I trust you, biggest dude I've ever met in my life. You know, I didn't really have a choice at that point. So it's the bottom of the third inning, and I'm supposed to go out there when the inning's over. But before that happens, there's a close play at home plate involving the star player of the Dragons at the time, Mr. Willie Mopena. And the umpire makes a horrible call, and they argue, and he throws Willie Mo out of the game. Then the manager goes out to argue, and he gets thrown out of the game. And now there's about 10,000 people booing the guy I'm going to pretend to be in like 2 minutes and try to get laughs at home plate. And this guy was like, do you want to wait a couple innings? I was like, hell yeah. I'd like to wait a couple innings. I'd like to wait a couple games if that's okay with you. And he's like, well, if you don't go out there, we can't pay you. So I was like, all right, well, then let's just wait a couple innings. Well, now it's the sixth inning, and things have not gotten any better for the umpire to the point where he requests that we actually move over to the visitor's dugout because he doesn't want to have to hang out with the home team while I'm out there clowning around. So he walks into the dugout. I put the mask on. They're like, tonight's umpire is a stand-up comedian, and he's going to do his act for you. So I walk out onto the field, and they're like, you suck. I mean, I got to home plate. This guy right behind the screen was like, I'm going to kill you. And I was like, all right, well, here we go. And I start making fun of the flea market and the people who go to it. And by the end of the material, like, they're listening. They're not laughing, but they're not booing. So then I had to decide, like, do I want to finish with some dignity or just fly the plane straight into the mountain? And I chose the latter. I was like, are there NASCAR fans here? They're like, yeah. And I was like, well, it sounds like NASCAR's big at the flea market. Boo! They're throwing hot dogs and pretzels. I mean, I'm smiling behind the mask because I don't know if you can relate to this. I'm looking at our guest, and I want to ask him this in a little bit. But there's something exhilarating about feeling pure hatred from that many people at one time, right? But this is clearly not gone according to plan, so I'm waiting for that guy to come out and save me. Well, here he comes jogging out of the visitor's dugout, and he's running towards me, and I'm like, okay, he's going to let everybody know it's just a big joke. But he doesn't slow down, and he basically spears me. I mean, just hits me harder than I've ever been hit in my life. I'm now laying on home plate. I have no idea what's really happened, but I know 10,000 people could not be happier that I may or may not have a spinal injury. So this guy picks me up off the ground like I'm a rag doll. Then he grabs the mic and he's like, Dragon fans, I'll take out the trash tonight. And they're like, yeah. Right? So he's carrying me to the dugout. And I'm like hunched over his back, and the wind's knocked out of me still. So I'm doing that like sound right in his ear. And when we get underground, he calls me out on it. He's like, dude, I'm not trying to make fun of you, but were you crying out there? And I was like, no, I wasn't crying, dick. I thought I was going to die. I can't believe I did this for $35. So our guest tonight is Major League umpire Randy Marsh.
Top it, Randy.
No. not even going to try.
Now, Randy, I had the pleasure of seeing you speak at the Green Diamond Gallery last year, and I'm very excited for you to tell some of the stories that you told that night. But can you relate to what I went through in terms of you actually just being an umpire and not trying to be funny, but like just what is that feeling when you know that everyone in there hates you?
You have this stupid sense of, I think I got it right anyway.
They're wrong and you're right.
Yeah. No, you really can't pay attention to what's being said coming out of the stands. And I really, even though people are screaming and all that stuff, usually the only ones you might hear once in a while is if you hear some really vile language.
Yeah.
And
you actually hear vile language?
And if that happens, if I can hear him, he's got, or her, they're pretty close.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm never going to go over and say, security, get rid of this guy. But in between innings, I'll be getting balls from the ball boy or whatever, and I'll call the security guy out. I say, you see this jerk back behind us in the orange sweater? Yeah, get him out of here. And next thing you know, there's a tap on his shoulder, and they're saying, come on. And he doesn't even know I said a word to him. But you don't want any confrontation with
sure.
Fans. But it does happen. I mean, probably the craziest crowds I ever was exposed to was in the Dominican Republic. I mean, they love their baseball down there. And everybody carries guns down there.
Yeah,
I was going to say. I mean,
it's not a good combination for the umpire.
Down there during a pitch, they have these bands, you know, these mariachi bands or whatever. You know, they'll do anything to distract the pitcher. And the pitcher might be right in the middle of his windup, and all of a sudden, da 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 da, you know, right.
Really?
Yeah.
A psych out.
Do anything they can to kind of psych them out. One time, a gun went off in the stands. And they went over and took the gun away from him and left the guy in the stands.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
We're going to hold that for you until the end of the game.
When we worked the playoffs, Rico Carty was still playing back then, okay? Rico Carty was still, at the end of his career, was still an unbelievable hitter. And he got ejected by the home plate umpire in the third game of the playoffs. And you've never, I mean, down there, the cameras, they come right on the field. You're arguing with the manager, and there's a camera over your shoulder. Oh. You know, it's insane. After the game, we had the militia. There was three guys, big guys. They had guns, they had belly clubs, and they made, like, a path for us to get to a paddy wagon with a Jeep behind it, and that's how we got back to the hotel that night.
Oh, my God.
It was like this. It was the... If you could, when you came back from there, you could umpire back here, no problem at all. Somebody yelling at you, give me a break. You know, but down there, your attention and everything, the baseball was excellent. It was very good baseball, but it was in extreme situations, stress and pressure of the people being right on you. You had to be able to concentrate all the way to the last pitch.
That's crazy. Is that an environment where you might get a little flustered? Like, do you pay too much attention to the surroundings when it's that extreme?
No, not really. You try not to. You really try not to.
It's just like Randy.
when you work a postseason game, you work a World Series or whatever. Be honest with you, when you go to umpire school, there are certain little drills that you're taught as far as getting down behind the plate the first pitch of the game. One's called on a rubber. One's get set, meaning go run it, stop. Other is timing, wait till the pitch comes all the way in the glove, then call it. And it's a little cadence that you get in your mind. And I swear to God, when I worked, I had five World Series. At the beginning of every game, I'd get down behind the plate and take pitches like that just to get that cadence going. And once you get that going the first couple innings, yeah, it's a World Series game, but it's another ball game, and you have to keep doing your job, and you phase the rest of the stuff out. It's baseball, and you can't worry about what other people are saying or doing, and I've been in some pretty excitable situations. Situations like in the Boston-New York playoffs in 2004 when A-Rod slapped the Arroyo's hand when
yep.
he was with
you're the first base umpire.
I was
right?
First base umpire, and Mankiewicz and second baseman came over and got right. They were right in front of me. I did not see him slap at him. All right, so I got together with Joe West. He was a home plate umpire. And Jeff Kellogg was a right field umpire. I said, all right, what happened here? And they said, it looked like he slapped him. Slapped his hand. I said, all right. I said, I'm calling Rodriguez out and bringing Jeter back to first base. And I said, get ready, boys, because this place is going to go nuts.
Were you the crew chief?
Yeah, I was okay. Crew chief. And we brought them back. And, you know, the media backed us so much because we got together and got to play right. And then I had to work the plate the next night in game 7. And I thought, when we got on the field, this will be interesting to see what the Yankee fans didn't hear a peep. Because they knew everything was handled correctly.
Yeah.
And then Boston kicked their butt that game, and Boston went to the World Series.
That was a crazy series. Yeah, wasn't that Roger Clemens broken bat?
No. That was with the different bats. That was 2000.
Another thing is a result of that game. During that game, as a result of that play, during that half inning, there were beer bottles not being thrown out on the field. So I went in to see Joe West, and Hirschbeck was at third base. And I said, we're going to get some security out here, right? So Kevin Hallinan, who was the head of security for Major League Baseball at the time, he was at the end of the Yankees dugout near where I was. And I went over and said, Kevin, I want a presence of security on the field, okay? Meaning the cops just down at the ends of the aisle all the way down. Well, I didn't know it, but they had the New York Police Academy cadets. they were going through school down underneath because they were going to bring them out to line the field after the game. Wouldn't you know it? I thought it was just going to be a few cops. Here they come. Hey. And they're lying all the way down both sides of the field. George Steinbrenner was pissed off. By the next half inning, we had cops down, and we got them off the field. But yeah, it was pretty crazy.
That's insane. So when did your eyesight start to go?
About 30 years ago.
You've probably heard that a couple times.
Yeah.
Is there ever been anything that's made you laugh?
Yeah. What's your favorite heckle?
Oh, I don't know. There's one of them involved my crew chief and dear friend Harry Wendelstedt in Montreal, and there was this woman that kept hollering at him for like 5 innings. Harry. She had this French accent. She was a beautiful woman. Harry, I need to talk to you after the game. I need to talk to you. And Harry's going, what does she want to talk to me for, right? Finally, the game's over. He goes, I got to go find out what this is about. He walks over. She goes, Harry, you suck. So that was a perfect example. Don't go over to the stands and talk to them anymore.
That's fantastic. The best heckle. Can I share this story? The best heckle I ever heard in a comedy club. There's a comedian who I find very funny. His name's Haywood Banks, and he charges a decent amount for his tickets. And he has this portion of his act where he holds up signs that have words on them. You know, it'll say like something, and he goes, "Oh, here's something," you know, and then he'll pull out a smaller one. Here's a little something. Right, so he was eating it. I mean, they weren't laughing at anything. So he pulls up this sign, and it says this. He goes, here's this. What do you think of this? And some guy goes, I paid $30 for this. Okay, back to baseball.
This is kind of like the rote question that I have at all of these things, but I always find this fascinating. How do you start as an umpire, and when did you think, hey, I'm going to be an umpire?
When I grew up in Covington, my dad and two other gentlemen, Frank Snyder and Joe Rabe, they ran Kenton County Knothole, District 28. And the umpires weren't showing up half the time, or if they did, they were late, or they were hungover. Because, you know, to be out on a Friday night, and then they got to go umpire some kids this big at 9 o'clock in the morning, and their head was pounding. You know, they didn't show up all the time. So they advertised. They got this idea to advertise in the Post and the Inquirer for any high school or college guys who might be interested in umpiring knothole games. So we had about 15 of us that showed up, and we went to the old Covington YMCA once a week during the winter. Read the rule book. They read the rules to you. We had a couple outdoor clinics, and then they threw you to the wolves, going up to the games. And, I mean, at that time, for the little guy, little kids, D-League game, you got like $3. B-League game might be, or C-League game might be $4, all the way up to like $6 or $7. Well, you know what? It turned out really good. Our guys were there all the time. They showed up all the time. Our house was like, it was like headquarters. And each of the umpires, they had like a little bank account because they just let it, all their fees for their games, they add up. And my mom was very much involved. And they'd call and say, Mrs. Marsh, I got a date tonight. Can I come and get $25 of my money? Yeah, come on over. And she'd give them $25 of their money. At the end of the summer, they'd have a couple $100. And we did that through high school. And then my dad was a dental technician by trade, and I was always interested in dentistry. So if I didn't end up doing what I was end up doing, I was interested in dentistry. So, but I graduated from high school at Holmes. I went to UK for the summer semester and the fall semester. And in January, I went to the professional umpire school in Daytona Beach. I was still 18 years old. And somehow I got a job in the Appalachian League. $450 a month and 8 cents a mile in my car. I was in professional baseball. And I had a blast. I had a blast. And then I got, you know, it was during the Vietnam era, and you had to be involved in the military. And one way or the other, end up in the reserves, went into active duty, came back out, went to the Florida State League, which is great. Florida State League, for your information, is just that. It's in the state of Florida. All the major clubs have they use their spring training fields. So you get major league fields that you're playing on every night. There 2 years, Eastern League 2 years, Pacific Coast League 7 years, winter ball, Dominican, Florida Instruction League. I did it, and I taught at the umpire school every year from January 2nd till the middle of February. I did everything I could to try to improve myself, whether it was to teach at the umpire school, work winter ball, do everything I could to try to make myself advance. And there's just not many. I mean, this year we hired 8 new umpires.
That's a lot.
It's like the floodgates opening up. Some years we have none.
Yeah.
Some years we might have one. But due to replay this year, we had to expand our staff.
Right.
So we needed 2 more crews. So we
is it because people aren't good enough, or you just people stay so long you don't need new people?
No, they're good. They're good enough. If we don't allow guys to if their guys now are in AAA for so long, we have to make a judgment on them whether we still have an interest in them or we think they're still have the ability or not. We don't want them to waste their life.
It's harder to get a call up as a major league umpire than as a major league player.
Yes, yes. Well, there's less umpires than there are state U.S. senators, too, when you think about it. We're up to 76 now. We had, just because of this year, we had 68 till this past winter.
I was doing the math. I think I got to 13 years before you got up to the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And your first big league game was here, right?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, you remember the call? I mean, players always remember the call. I'm sure an umpire remembers the call.
I was in Portland, Oregon, and the funny part of the story, you guys all remember Willie Horton?
Yeah.
Played in the big leagues. Willie's at the end of his career, and he's playing in the Coast League. He had just come back to the Coast League. I was the umpire-in-chief of the league. I floated around and worked with all the crews. At that time, major league players did not have to wear an air flap helmet, but in the minor leagues, it was required. So Willie did not want to wear an air flap helmet. So the league president asked me, he said, Randy, would you go talk to Willie and find out what the deal is? I said, all right. I said, but if I talk to him and he agrees to sign a waiver, are you all right with that? He goes, yeah. So I go and talk to Willie. I said, Willie, what's the deal with the air flap helmet? Down here, it's mandatory. All through the minor leagues, it's mandatory. This guy's my judge. This is exactly what he said. I don't want to wear the ear flap helmet because I've been hit in the head too many times.
That's the logic of a man who's been hit in the head too many times.
I said, work with me, Willie. Work with me. Yeah. He goes, no, I'll tell you what it is. He goes, I have no neck. He says, my shoulders go from here to here. He says, when I'm at bat, he says, I came up under Billy Martin. And Billy Martin wants you turning like this and facing the hitter. He says, I can't do that. I've got to turn like this to face the hitter. He says, and if I have to wear an air flap helmet and look like this, he says, I can't see. I mean, it blurs my vision. I said, okay. I said, will you sign a waiver? He says, yeah. You draw it up. We'll sign it tomorrow. So the next morning, the phone rings, and it's a league president, and he goes, yeah, Randy, I got something to talk to you about. I said, I talked to Horton. I said, he's going to sign the waiver tonight. He goes, no. He says, I got something else I want to talk to you about. I says, what's that? He says, you're going to big leagues.
I said, when?
He says, you're going in 10 days. So, wow. They already knew somebody was out, and at that time, their vacations were just starting up in the big leagues. At the time, the major league umpires only got 2 weeks vacation, and they didn't start till May. That night, we got rained out. If you could imagine how much I celebrated that night knowing I was going up to big leagues. I couldn't have found either cheek of my ass with either hand by the end of the night. The next morning, and now the National League office called Blake Collin. He says, Randy, congratulations, blah, 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 blah. Told me what my number was, number 30. I had that number for all those years I was in the big leagues. I mean, it was exciting as hell. The next day, Blake calls me back. He says, there's been a change of plans. I said, oh, no. Don't tell me I'm not going. He goes, no, instead of going 10 days, we need you tomorrow. So, really? He goes, and I really hate to do this to any young umpire, but I need you in Cincinnati. I hate to have a young umpire have to work in his hometown because there's just too many things, too much pressure, too many exciting things going on with your family. He says, but that's where I need you to go. He said, can you get there? I said, if you get the hell off the phone. So I ended up flying to San Francisco and met Ed Montague, who I was going to be working with, mm-hmm. and we flew to Cincinnati. Took the red eye, and uniforms had been sent to the house. I was up all day. I don't think I slept. When I went on the field Friday night, I had not been to bed. And at that time, it was the Dodgers Red Series when they were all in the Western Division. It was a big rivalry. And Saturday was a doubleheader game. Saturday was a game of the week. Sunday was a doubleheader. So it was an exciting time to be involved. So
what year was this?
That was in 1981. Yeah, 1981.
So, and when did you get up to stay?
I was 82. I was on the staff full time.
Wow.
Yeah. They actually had a couple guys who had worked during the strike in 79, and they sent one of them back to the minor leagues, and they kept me. I was fortunate they kept me up big leagues the rest of the time.
And then you were a full time umpire until
4 years ago.
Wow.
Retired. They'd been talking to me about becoming a supervisor. And when they got the last umpire's contract resolved, where the retirement was where I wanted and everything, I said, okay, I'll make the switch. So I literally, in 4 days' time, I went from active umpire to supervisor. And then the following spring was when Joe Torre came on board as executive vice president, and he made me director of all major league umpires. So now I'm traveling around busier than I did when I was umpiring. I retired so I wouldn't be on the road for 3 weeks and come home for 2 days and leave again. At least now I make my own schedule and go where I want to go.
But the umpire schedule is grinding and demanding. Can you just give us kind of an idea of what a schedule is?
Well, they actually get their schedule all the way till the middle of August. We'll get that to them in the next couple weeks. Because they have to, when they're traveling and they have conventions in different cities and everything, people at the hotels, they'll work with you, but they also have,
trust
priorities
me,
too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they basically get 4 1-week breaks during the season. Three of them are usually what we call crew vacations. The whole crew goes home for a week and then comes back. And then the other week is called a block vacation, meaning during the course of a month, each guy takes a week. And we put a AAA guy with him for a whole month. See? So he
that
stays.
Makes sense.
Yeah, he stays in it for the whole month. Now, this year, we got something new that we have to do, and that's go into replay in New York. The decisions will be handled for replay out of New York.
So you'll have a whole crew in New York?
We'll have two.
Two crews in New York.
Two crews to cover
every night.
Every night. And they'll be at a place called BAM, Baseball Automated Media, down in Chelsea area in New York. When you walk in this place, you've never seen so many TV monitors in your life. They'll have like 12 monitors for every game.
It's very similar to what the National Hockey League does, right?
Yeah, but they have like one guy do it.
Yeah.
But he only does goals.
Right, and you guys do everything.
Yeah. Our guys, I mean, everything. There's going to be a lot more plays that are going to be reviewable this year. But other things like interference, obstruction, those things will not be reviewable.
Okay.
But if they have to go to replay, hopefully the headsets will be close to the field. They'll be in touch with New York. They'll have all the videos in front of them, and they'll be able to tell them right away, make the call, and go from there. Doesn't mean their managers are always going to like it, but at least they're getting a second chance at seeing what the
play
is.
It's not going off someone's memory.
Yeah. What was the umpire's reaction to this expansion?
The umpires are actually very good about it. They want it done right. They don't want to look like a bunch of bumbling fools out there having to wait for stuff and people and a fan sitting around saying, come on, let's go. They want it to be quick. They want it to be thorough. They want it to be handled correctly and move on from game from there. One of our guys had a good quote. They asked him what he wanted out of replay, and he says, I want to be able to correct my worst miss. If a guy had a miss that affected the outcome of a game, or maybe it was a play at the end of the game or something like that, he wants to be able for that play to be corrected. And, balls and strikes aren't going to be reviewed. There's quite a few other plays that are not going to be reviewed, but there are quite a few more that will be.
Do you remember your worst miss?
What's that?
Do you know your worst miss? What was your worst miss?
You know what? I never dwelled on them.
Right. You never had a Denkinger?
No, I never had a play like that. I had one towards the end of my career that bothered me, but it was so loud, nobody could tell. And that was Detroit and Minnesota, and Brandon the Inge was at bat, and a ball came in, and it just barely ticked his shirt. That stadium was the loudest stadium I've ever worked in.
The Metrodome?
Yeah, and you couldn't tell. You couldn't tell it. And, Jimmy Leland came out, and he goes, Jimmy, I don't think it touched his shirt, but I got to go. He goes, okay, all right, just go ahead. And I looked at the replay afterward, and it did. Now, whether it didn't really affect – it would have put another guy on base. It was like a 5-2 game or something that they were down. Might have kept their rally going a little bit. I don't know. But now something like that can be reviewed.
Is it tougher, the umpires now? I always think about this, and I'm not just kissing up to you because you're right here. But I always think, people say, umpiring officiating is not as good as it once was. And I always think, we have HD now, and everything has all these camera angles.
Yeah.
We know better. And it's I'm always amazed at how many calls guys get right.
The technology is out there. You either use it and try to benefit for everybody or let it pass you right on by. And right now, after every game, every umpire gets a computer readout on every pitch that he called the night before. It will tell him if he called a pitch, a strike, that was 2.58 inches outside. It's that accurate. Now, this is not the system you see on TV.
Right. I think a lot of people see the TV.
This is our system. It's called a ZE system, zone evaluation. It's in every ballpark. It has four cameras, high and low, and somehow it works with a computer. It will tell high, low, inside, outside, and their percentage.
And it's 3D, right?
Yes. And it will tell them all that information on every pitch. What were their percentages for the whole staff? Was like 96.43 for the whole season, for the whole staff.
Amazing.
We had several guys average 98%. The lowest average was 94.
And that's just balls and strikes?
Hmm?
And you're speaking of balls and strikes.
And you could work a game as 94% and nobody say a word, It's just, they accepted whatever you were calling back there. The other thing that comes into play, we have six supervisors. We have observers in 12 cities. Observers go in and they watch the game. They make a complete report on every umpire in that game. But they have no interaction with the umpire. They're just reporting on what they saw on the field. If they saw a guy was not hustling or whatever, we get those reports and we follow up on them. We also have something called the Assure system, which every close play that is called in that game, they review the next day. I mean, they are under so much scrutiny; it's unbelievable. It's hard to maintain that level of accuracy with somebody looking over your shoulder the whole time. And that's basically what it is: somebody's second guessing every pitch you made, every call you made. But you know what? If you're not tough enough, get the hell out and do something else.
Do you see the box on TV? Mm-hmm. Is how accurate do you think that is, and does it correlate with what you guys your report?
No. Compared to what, I mean.
Because yours moves for the batter.
The batter. They actually takes a picture of the batter, and they adjust the high-low to that batter.
Where actually is it? Because we always hear.
It's the rule book people were fighting this. They wanted a point between here and the waist.
Right underneath the armpit.
And the waist.
The waist, yeah.
Right? And where
that's
is that?
That's a ball, right?
Yeah.
That's a ball.
I really want to take a picture of you two right now.
Now, the reason they had to go through this whole definition, they're saying it was a point in between those two, because they didn't want to use the word for something that was right in the middle.
No nipple, basically.
You said it, not me.
Trent, and then language.
The bottom of the strike zone is the hollow of the knee, right at the very bottom of the kneecap.
A hollow.
Now, it is not when a hitter is standing straight up. It's when the hitter is striding.
Striding? See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's when he's in a position to hit the ball. See? Read your rule book. But that's
that
the strike zone.
That thing's confusing. And long and detailed.
Believe me, I know. Believe me, I know. But it's not when you're standing straight up. It's when and it drops. Your strike zone.
Right.
Your
sure.
drop zone's going to.
So because everybody says, oh, you know, they don't call anything up below the.
And we're trying. We try to get more and more guys to call the higher pitch, and you know they want you to call the higher pitch until you call the higher pitch on that hitter. The hitter doesn't like it.
Pitchers like that.
Yeah, pitchers like it. But that's basically all the different scrutiny that they're under. It really is amazing. And they come through it pretty darn good.
When you take a foul ball straight back into the chest, mm-hmm. what's the equivalent of what that feels like, even though you have a chest protector on?
It just jolts you for a second. I mean, some of them you do not feel. You feel that. But the stuff we have is state-of-the-art stuff. Joe West has, years ago, we used to go into the Riddell factory. Riddell makes all the football pads. A guy by the name of Teddy Monica, he made the first chest protectors, baseball chest protectors, down in Houston for Joe West and myself and a couple other guys. I still have my original one. Well, they got out of that business, and Joe ran with it with was another company between now and Wilson. Now he's been with Wilson for years, and it is an outstanding chest protector. That's not a concern there or there. You're vulnerable on your elbows and your arms and headshots. Shin guards and everything, you're well protected. If you're positioning yourself correctly, meaning you're facing the pitcher, facing the ball, then everything's protected. If you start going in this way, now you're leaving yourself vulnerable to be hitting the side. Biggest concern we have now is concussions, just like anybody else does in football. And that's something that our guys do every spring. They just did, or every January, we just had them all in Scottsdale, is they do a baseline concussion test. And they keep that on file. And now if Mark Latton, who's in charge of all of the umpires' health services, if you take a shot and he thinks you've been concussed, he'll have you take the test. And if you don't match up with that, you're done for at least a week.
Is there always an extra umpire with each crew in case somebody gets hurt? You just go down to one.
We always have four when we start, and we might have to end a game with three sometimes. Rarely happens, but
I was reading you had a famous game. Well, it was the Brave game? Is the Cabrera, the Sid Bream game? you were not behind the plate to start the game.
No.
This is the 1991 92 NLCS against the Pirates.
Atlanta-Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Atlanta-Pittsburgh. You know, everybody sees that the Sid Bream, he's safe.
Taking a year to get from
the bobblehead. Bobblehead, the greatest bobblehead ever, but you didn't start behind the plate.
No, I had had the plate in game two, and now John McSherry was the crew chief. John's the umpire that died here in Cincinnati. And he had game one. We rotated all the way around. All of us had the plate. Now we go back game seven. It goes to game seven. The crew chief goes back behind the plate again. And then into the first inning, we thought he was having a heart attack. He was white as a sheet and is sweating and pulse was up. And Bill White, who was president of the National League at the time, was great. He had him come over and sit down in the ball boy's chair there. And I got over there right away because I was at first base. And Bill White said, "You know what, John? Don't worry about this game. This game's going to go on. We need to get you taken care of," which I really appreciated. So, I mean, because it was game seven. You know, everybody's waiting. Get the game going. Get the game going. Get the game going. And all of our guys, umpires, came in, and we said, "John, he says, "No, I'll be all right." We said, "You're going to hospital. Just tell us which one of us you want us to work the plate. I need us to do it." He said, "Randy, strap it on." So I took off. And we had all our stuff packed to go home. It was game seven, right? So I'm in there getting crap out of my equipment case and went out there, and it ended up ending on a game at home plate in the bottom of ninth inning with Sid Bream scoring, running with his knee was looked like he had a baby had a baby carriage on his knee.
It looked like me running.
When Barry Bonds is in left.
Yeah.
One of the best arms in baseball.
Yeah, and then a whole story about that. You know, Van Slyke told him to move. Mm-hmm. And Bonds gave him the wicked signal of whatever in his glove, like, "I'll stay right here where I want to." And maybe if he had been moved over a little bit, he would have had him easy at home plate.
Do you remember that call? I mean, do you see this? Do you think – is it just another play to you, another play at the plate?
It was – I mean, all I think any umpire – it was funny. When I was walking off the field, one of the guys said, "Man," he said, "you could have really put it on." I said, "You know what? I gave one signal. He was safe." And I said, all I wanted to do was get the play, put myself in the best position possible and get that play right. I don't care what I look like calling it, okay? And yeah, it's like he just phased everything out. Everything was kind of going slow motion. You know, and LeVier says, "I'm 5'7". If I'm 5'8 or 5'9", we had him, you know.
Do you ever worry, like, did I get that call right? I mean, do you go back and look at that one?
I would check my plays all the time. Immediately after a game, I go check my plays. We're our worst critics, because if we miss the play,
not the loudest, but the worst.
We want to know why we missed the play.
Right.
If an umpire missed a play, it's usually because he called it too quick, he had the wrong position, or for some reason he wasn't concentrated, he was distracted somehow. And usually an unusual play sometimes gets an umpire in a position he can't change. And that's, you know, the ball's overthrown or something, you know, thrown out, you know, different than a normal play. And now the umpire's got to try to get into a better position, and it's physically impossible to do. That's when he might miss a call. But, yeah, we check our own plays all the time.
Do you have any memorable interactions with managers that maybe you're friends with or you were mortal enemies with or just something? Because I'm always curious to know if there's any, like, what's exactly being said, if it is all about the play or if there's anything personal or if somebody's like, "Dude, you need to throw me out so it gets my team fired up," or something.
Well, I tell you what, my first year, we're in Philadelphia, and this is when Pete Rose was playing with the Phillies. And they were playing San Diego. And in the first inning, I called out Cito Lescano on a play at home plate. And when he got up, he says, no, I was safe." When he got up, he had dirt in his hands. The dirt went all over me. Boom, see, I ran him. So Dick Williams was his manager. Dick came out. He just lost his right fielder, and he's only been in it's a half inning into the game. So naturally, he went too.
So, you guys go talk about it.
Yeah, it was pretty short, sweet. We go through the whole game. It's a 3-2 game, and it's in the bottom of the ninth inning, and the Phillies had one out, and they had a runner on, and I called Pete out on a pitch on the outside corner. And I thought he said, "You're a blankety blank."
That doesn't sound very offensive.
Right.
Motherfuckers, the automatic objection.
Okay. There we go. So anyway, he went, and then Tug McGraw, who had pitched the top of the ninth inning, he thought, this new meat, piece of meat umpiring back here, in his first year, I'm going to get some of him. He went. And then the manager, he went. So the headlines, the next, I had 7 ejections total the whole year. I got 5 of them one night. The headline the next night by Bill Conlon, who could really take some jabs at you. I'm sure John and Trent know him. And Philadelphia, the headline was "Obscure Rookie Umpire Ejects Baseball Legend." So now that the next night, Pete brings the lineup cards up. And Pete knows who I am, and I didn't know who he is. So Eddie Montague says that Pete goes, "You and Randy okay?" He goes, "Fuck yeah." He goes, "He and I are fine." He goes, "If he and I can't get along," he says, "his aunt won't wait on me at the hitching post over in Covington." So, but, and then when I went back in there after that, the photographer brought me a 11x14 picture, copy of that picture. Because that was the picture in the back of the Philadelphia paper the next day. And Eddie goes, "Oh, you got to get Pete to sign that." He says, "I see, you've got to be kidding me." He goes, no, come on, let's call him. We went and called him. He goes, "Yeah, send it on over." So I've got it on my wall to this day. Best wishes to a great guy, Pete Rose. And there's a picture of me.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break, let everybody get a refill, use the restroom. We'll come back with some questions and answers, and then we'll shut the mics off and do some more questions and answers for the folks that showed up tonight. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of the CDOT Show, presented by Inquirer Sports. Welcome back. Welcome back to the CDOT Show, presented by Inquirer Sports. I am your co-host, Josh Sneed, along with Trent Rosecrans from the Inquirer, and our special guest this evening, Randy Marsh, 32 years in the major leagues? Is that true?
29, actually, but altogether with my years in the minor leagues, we're looking at
44.
Yeah.
Good for you.
All right, we're going to take balls and strikes.
We're going to take some questions from our audience this evening. So if you have a question,
please, a star-studded audience.
Please
too.
Step forward to the microphone.
We've got John Fay in the audience, Dan yes, Zaborski from ESPN.com, all sorts of celebrities.
Wow!
Yes. All right, we got our first question.
What was the most outside the Dominican Republic? What's the closest you ever had to a riot, or like you really feel like you were on the verge of losing control?
There's been a couple times where we've had to take the teams off the field for fans throwing something on the field. One's kind of funny, actually. This is in Montreal. The outfielder played for Montreal, Henry
Rodriguez, old Henry Bar?
Yeah, the old Henry Bar. So all the fans in Canada, they start buying old Henry bars, and then they start throwing them on the field. And they were all over the place. And now it's pretty tough when a guy's trying to catch a fly ball and an O. Henry bar hits him in the back of the head.
Stupid Canadians.
But as far as we've had a couple situations where fans got a little fired up. They're like the thing I was talking about in Boston and New York. You try not to do that. You try not to take them off the field. But if you do, you do everything you can to avoid any protest. A forfeit. You don't ever want to forfeit a game. I mean, if you do that, you're forfeiting the gate, you're forfeiting everything back, and you're not, you don't want to do that. But you have to sometimes try to get their attention, and the only way you get their attention is to get people off the field. So it does happen rarely, fortunately rarely, and hope they never have to, but it's a protective thing if anything else. So.
I'm still mad that Montreal's taken off for the road trips. It's the best road trip.
Yeah, there's a couple good places city. A lot of guys like to go to.
The ballet.
The ballet.
Yes, sir. Next question.
Bob from Batesville. I wanted to know who the most chatty first baseman that you dealt with. I was at the LaSalle Stag, and Sean Casey is a very chatty guy. And I was just wondering which person.
Yeah, Sean talked a lot. He'd ask you how your family was and everything else, you know. Plus, I mean, he met my daughter one time, and to this day, I see him when I'm working. I have to go to all the playoff games, all the World Series games, and I see him there, and the first thing he asks, hey, how's Lauren doing? You know, see, I mean, he's a great guy. Now, years ago, we were in Montreal, and
does everything happen in Montreal?
I miss Montreal.
Gary Carter's catching for Montreal, and Buckner was playing first base for the Cubs. Now, whenever those two teams played each other, their wives sat together. They were good friends. So there's a pop-up. Buckner pops up, and he's cussing at home plate. Gary throws his mask down. Buckner goes to throw his bat down, and there's Carter's mask. Bam! Crushes his mask, right? He gets thrown out. I mean, not thrown out. The guy catches the ball. Catch the ball. They give him another mask. But they're mad. He's pissed off. Carter's pissed off because he crushed his mask. Back then, they would play each other in one city, and then a week later, they'd play him. You know, they played him in Chicago now. And their wives are sitting together again. Carter's catching. Buckner hits a ball. Carter takes his bat, breaks it over his knee, throws it in a dugout. Now Carter comes up the plate. He gets a single. And he's standing at first base. And now the two of them are going at it. All right. Like I said, their wives are sitting together up in the stands. And Harry Wendelstedt was at first base. Lee Wire was a crew chief, actually, at the time. I mean, both teams now coming on the field because these two guys are acting like two idiots. and you know, we could have just got rid of both of them. But with both the teams standing around, Harry went, all right, enough of this shit. He goes, this is the most childish thing I have ever seen. I'm giving you both an option. You stand right here, you shake hands with each other, and you get back in your position. And not another word said, or else I'm dumping both your asses right now.
Or you're grounded.
They shook hands. Everybody turned and looked at each other like, why are we standing here? Went back to their positions. And we finished the game.
That's awesome.
That's why he's the best ever. Yeah.
Is there anybody that's really good at talking under their breath? So, like, if you're not standing right at home plate, you're like, oh, that guy's probably pretty nice, but he's really going, dickhead, asshole.
No, not really, because we can read lips pretty good from those hitters.
Are there any chatty catchers?
Carter used to drive people nuts.
They talk smack? That's what I want to know.
Carter, I know some hitters have turned around and said, Gary, if you don't shut up, I'm going to take this bat and hit you right over the top of the head. I mean, if he could get away with it, he'd be back there going, hey, batter, 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 batter. I mean, he was always talking. He'd be talking to the guy, hey, how's his family doing? Go, what do you care about my family? Just catch the ball, you know? He would drive some guys pretty well crazy. So.
Was that genuine, or do you think he was trying to get people?
Nah, I think it was genuine. I think it was genuine.
Next question.
Yeah, do you have a favorite city and a least favorite city? I feel like Montreal is going to be in here somewhere.
Actually, Montreal was not my... It was a beautiful city, but it wasn't my favorite city to go to. It really wasn't at all. Chicago has always been one of my favorites. You never know what the weather's going to be there, but I mean, what a beautiful, beautiful city. And I like now our guys go to both. You know, I was in the National League for 18 years before we merged staffs, and I always loved going to Chicago. Now, since we merged staffs, we go to Boston. I love going to Boston, even though those two parks probably are more jackpots for umpires, umpiring wise, because it's so irregular. You know, the shape of it, and there's all these nooks and crannies or balls can bounce into and bounce back on. It's like you're umpiring a game in a pinball machine, you know, the ball's going all over the place. But Boston and Chicago were always two of my favorite. I love going to San Francisco.
Where'd you hate? Is there a place you couldn't stand to go?
Montreal.
I love Montreal. Full circle.
You know
so
what?
Much.
I always looked at it this way. I was umpiring Major League Baseball, doing what I wanted to do all my life, and providing a good living for my family. And I don't care where I had to go.
I can relate to that. I really can. Yeah. Because people are like, you got to go to Omaha. And I'm like, for 5 days, there's not really a city I've been to that I can't have fun for 5 days.
Right, right. I mean, and you're treated with respect everywhere you go.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, our guys are. You fly first class. You stay in first class hotels. What's the not like about a city?
Just like Josh Sneed.
Yeah, just like me.
Yeah. Motel 6, right? Quarters for the bed.
Okay. And that's our show.
Yes, sir.
So you guys mentioned having to hire new umpires for this season and like occasionally getting new ones up. What's the evaluation process for that, since it's not as public for like a prospect coming up and for the players?
We have 4 supervisors that do nothing but watch AAA umpires, which is top of the minor league system. We're taking 22 AAA umpires to spring training with us. And they'll all work probably 25 games. And they'll work with major league umpires in spring training. So they get observed a lot. When I came up to big leagues, there was one supervisor. You were lucky if you saw a major league supervisor during the season. Every minor league umpire last year got observed by a major league supervisor 26 or 27 games.
Wow.
Of his season, which is pretty good. They're evaluated at the end of each season. If they don't think that they're going to be a major league quality, let them know so they're not wasting their life. Otherwise, they go to the Fall League, Arizona Fall League. They'll go to major league spring training with us. And their judgment as far as ball, strike, fair, foul, safe, and out should be really good. It should be at the top. It's how they handle themselves and how they handle other people in stressful situations, in arguments in front of thousands of people at a game, millions of people on TV, how you handle yourself during those situations. To me, that's what separates the men from the boys. I mean, they're in a lot of scrutiny, under a lot of scrutiny.
Next question.
What's the rationale for the rule about not showing replays in the stadiums?
You're going to see them this year.
Yeah, what has it been, though?
Why?
Yeah, why did that rule ever come to be?
I think it didn't want to embarrass an umpire who missed a call. Didn't want to embarrass a player that made a stupid play. It wasn't just for the umpires. It was for the players, too.
And you had no recourse then. And you had no recourse.
No. It was an agreement between the Umpire Association and Major League Baseball. Yeah, and the Players Association has input. All three of them have input on anything like that.
And then this year, you will see replays.
You'll see a lot more replays.
In the stadium, which is good if you're in the stadium.
Well, you know what? What happened was there's two things. One is the owners of the ball club say, Our people can sit home and watch it on TV if they want it. But we want them to come to our games. We want those butts in the seat, in the stands. We want them spending their money and everything else, but they can't see the replays that they would see if they were sitting at home. So we want to be able to do that more. So that's good. And then as far as replay is concerned, several of the general managers have said, look, you know what, we have sympathy for the umpires in that there's an unusual play. It might be a misplay, might be a close play, maybe just some goofy play that everybody that's even people in the stands are watching something on TV or the people who are at home, they're watching it, and everybody else can see that play except those 4 guys. So give them an avenue where if there is a possible misplay that they can go and check it and correct it. I mean, we could tell if you're on the field and you have a close play, And within a few minutes, they show it within the stadium, and you hear all the crowd go, ooh. You think, oh, shit, I just missed that play. Or it's awful close.
But I'll go back to something Trent said. I think, to your credit, I also find myself surprised at how many calls you get right.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
when they're debating it in high-def, slow motion
on HD, then I go,
eight different
I have no
angles,
clue.
And you got it right on the first time.
What you're also going to find, though, just because you go to replay doesn't mean it's automatically going to be flipped. I mean, if they go to replay, and you, I don't care how many angles you look at, if it is not clear and convincing that if an umpire called it out, if it's not clear and convincing that it was safe, it's not going to be changed. If it's like, man, it's a coin flip, we don't know, it's going to stay what it was called.
Very cool. Well, we're going to turn the recording off and continue to take some questions here for those who showed up tonight.
You guys are all missing out for not showing up.
Yeah, this is
the good stuff
we've
had so far. So,
are you on Twitter or anything like that?
I don't.
You knew the
answer. I don't do any of those things.
All right. Well, thanks for the listeners.
And thanks for coming out, Trent. Tell them how they can find you.
I am on Twitter at @ctrent. We're going to be back here at Motor. Looks like opening day eve. We'll be here. We may not have all of us, but March 30th, I will be back from Arizona, and I think we're going to do a little something here, and that will be – I'm christening this opening day eve. I think this should be like – it's like New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve, but better.
Yeah.
So opening day eve.
Is that WrestleMania night? Where's Josh Short?
It will be.
It will be, yeah. boy, he's going to have a tough time deciding what to do. I am at Josh Schneed on Twitter.
And I
have shows here in town next week, February 13 through 16, at Go Bananas Comedy Club in Montgomery.
Because if you didn't get enough of that umpire story, you can hear it again probably.
Yeah, and my new album, the release date just got set yesterday. It's going to be March 11th. It's called Unsung Hero, and next week it'll be available for pre-order on iTunes. So I'll put that out there. Follow me on Twitter. Follow Trent on Twitter. Thank you to you guys in the house tonight for coming out. Thank those of you at home for listening. Thank you, Randy Marsh, for being here. And this has been the CDOT Show, presented by Inquirer Sports. We'll see you next time.